Hey, top of the morning, the Husband Club Podcast. I am CEO Grease.
So, Spence, man, I'm here.
And got a special guest. My uncle pulled up on us, man, unannounced. Right. He said he's coming through. I've been talking to him, you know, about our podcast. So, hey, how you doing, huh?
I am Jerry R. Period Smith. Got to put that R. Period in there.
Okay.
Those Smiths.
Yes, I'm plain old Jerry Smith otherwise. So I throw that up in there.
OG.
Hey, those last names don't hit like they used to.
What you mean?
No, so you want to change yours?
No, because you know in the 90s they'd be like, hey, man, you know what I'm saying? The Carters over there. You know, the Carters. We grew up with the Carters.
And Barnum Brothers over there.
Hell, be hitting like that no more, man.
No, my background is like military.
Smith. Okay.
They use Smitty.
You know, okay. Shout out.
8 years that. And then same thing in law enforcement. They used to go by your last name, Smith. Officer Smith.
But I've been knowing y'all forever. Isn't the spell different, right?
No.
Why?
No. I made it up.
Yeah. Hold on. What?
I made it up. When I was doing stand-up comedy, I put the P-S-M-Y-T-H, silent P, because I saw it. Make people laugh before. Now, host is, he's laughing before I even start talking.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a marketing move.
That's Monk. You see, you got the
I see it.
They can't see it up in there, though.
The Uzi Vert.
Yeah, man.
The Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, it is that.
All right, man. So, tell the people a little bit about you and your background.
I came here. Born and raised in Arkansas. Go Razor Blacks. Whatever. Mm. And I left there in 1974 when I joined the Air Force, and went to Columbus, Ohio, a couple of years, 74 to 76, 76, 78. I went to Germany, and es hab zwei da gewesen, bis Deutschland. That's German. And you look at me like, I know exactly what I'm
talking about. Wide open my head.
No, I was there for a couple of years. And I started taking German courses at college at night. And the 2 years I was there, it was like, it was a whole new, different world. And I came here in 78 and started bringing the family out. See, it was October 78. And around January is when my mom and dad and his mother and all the whole family started coming out around the beginning of 78.
So you were the first one that moved out here?
Yeah. Okay. I was stationed here from the Air Force. I wanted to come to the West Coast, so it was either here or George Air Force Base in California. And they stopped me here, and pretty much like, I ain't seen nothing bad about it. But I hear people say, I hate Vegas. You ain't getting the right life.
So you came out here in 76. What was your outlook of Vegas back then?
I was 22. I, you know, I was running. I was a DJ, 22.
Oh, word.
I got here on the base October 78, and that was on Thursday. And on that weekend, I went to the NCO club, and the DJ that was there, he and I became like brothers from night one.
You were single back then, too?
Oh, yeah.
So you were trying to bag like Dorothy Dandridge and everything.
I was a DJ, man. And we would like Hurt 'Em Bad. Everybody knew Hurt 'Em Bad. Everybody knew Hurt 'Em Bad back in the day.
You hear they say they called him Smitty.
Smitty, right? He had a whole new alias.
That's the first. Hey, did he? It might have been Smutty.
Smutty Slutty.
That was my reputation, yes.
Okay.
I cleaned it up. I cleaned it up, though.
You say Slutty Smutty. Slutty Smutty.
I did clean it up, though. So, it worked.
Yeah. Was you any radio stations? Anything? What was you doing? Or just gigs?
No. So we were DJs, you know, doing weddings and KCP. We could do some stuff on.
Was they still trying to get an antenna on Black Mountain back then, too?
We were at KCP, was in the Nucleus Plaza in a room about, you know, big as a bathroom.
Oh, wow.
And you could only hear it from Nucleus Plaza, maybe up to Bonanza.
And it came a long way.
Yeah, it was very, very small. Mm. But we would just go there like on the special occasions, whatever. And when they started doing live remotes, then they would come to where we were doing dances or, you know, whatever event that we were doing and stuff back in the day.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. But when Grease was talking about the radio talk show, I retired in 06. I did 20 years law enforcement. And so 2014, I went back to UNLV. I got my degree there in 1990, but I went back in 2014. And the first class that I took, the station manager came in and said, want some volunteers. And I proposed to them to do a talk show that I wanted to interview black professionals.
Yes.
And they came back with a counterproposal. Mm-hmm. if you change that to the minority professionals and throughout the entire community, you got a show. So cool. I started, putting the concept together,
yeah.
And my show replaced Tavis Smiley's show that they had on UNLV on Tuesday night, and I did have like 5 years or so. Interviewed about over nearly 200 people.
Did it bother you at all for that name change at all, or did you just look at it like a business decision?
No. What happened was the programming changed, so all of us volunteers, DJs, and talk show hosts and all that, then they say get your butt out and. Peace out.
I'm talking about from going from black to minority.
Oh, see, my thing, I'm non-binary. I don't claim black American. I don't claim white American. I'm non-binary. I'm an American.
Really?
I'm politically, I don't claim Republican or Democrat. I'm non-binary. I took that and say, should I be forced to do that? And my concept I'm working with is in American patriotism of black choice. Claim your black citizenship. 14th Amendment, claim your black vote. 15th Amendment.
So you're non-binary, but you claim your black citizenship?
Oh, yeah. So this is what happened with that. Funny you should ask. Mm-hmm. So the Constitution was ratified 1787-88.
Okay.
Black people voted to ratify the law of the land. Black people, free black people, voted to ratify the law of the land. So the enslaved blacks were not considered citizens. But in 1868, the 14th Amendment says if you are born on these soils or naturalized, you are a citizen with unalienable rights. I never had a conversation with a black person talking about the 14th Amendment, and now they don't claim their citizenship. It's like you leave your luggage at the airport, then whoever finds it going to take that Rolex watch and put it in their pocket, and they're going to take it and throw it in the trash because it's unclaimed.
Right.
So now you look at your citizenship not being claimed or claiming your black vote in 1869, if they're formerly enslaved, and it says formerly enslaved because America has a history of enslaving whites, Indians, Chinese, and blacks. So it says formerly enslaved, now able to vote. You got to claim it. You got to claim it. Then you demand. When you claim something, you demand it. Please get your foot off my neck. Please give me my right. Give me my right. I demand my rights.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to sue you. That's how I look at it.
These would be the conversations.
You see my eyes. See my eyes perked up, man. That's what I, you know.
Yeah, no, it's real game, though. Because, like I said, like you said, the last names don't hit the same. But with my unc, he makes sure that we know where we came from.
Yeah.
You know, so he's very proud about, our last names. And, like I said, he's a legacy guy. You know, so I know a lot of the information that I get from, too, just business stuff, too, just outside of my dad, is my unc right here, so.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, let's go back on the agenda y'all talking about because
we got to see too, Unc, a lot of times that we got to see older professionals too. Yep. You know, that's why you're older, you know, black man too. So we got a couple topics.
You should be black.
Yeah, okay.
He's a claim. I got no, all that.
But you know, we got a couple topics that you can give us. Your input on, because like I said, also give us a little history about your marriage or and how you want to give a background about yourself.
I was scared you're going to ask me that. No, so I was telling, I was talking to someone on the phone and saying that my wife and the way that she is, her background, and then mine, I don't think it would work for you guys or anybody else. And each individual, whatever they bring to the marriage, that makes it unique.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it unique. Now, there are some universal things we're saying that, like Utah's, approach to marriage and household and all that. But when you start looking at the Constitution and you start looking at the laws, it favors marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the Constitution, the institution of marriage. I've been there 3 times.
Okay.
The institution of marriage. Now, then you're going to start saying that, what about the individual that are bringing their unique relationships experiences to the marriage and what their demands are or what they're wanting, their outcomes, what they're wanting to make happen. Some people are wanting, children. Some don't want children. Some want a big family, blended family, and all that.
Yeah.
So you can't 100% say go on your marriage and what's going to happen. So my most recent ex-wife, she and I split everything down the middle. Because as it did happen, the half that she got, that was her half.
Yeah,
so,
right.
And other people I know when I was working law enforcement, there was one guy married 8 times. Jesus. And there were a lot of them that were telling me, man, your marriage ain't da 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 da. And they were married 3 or 4 times to my one. I was married 20 years to my most recent ex-wife. But the part of saying that there are some universalities to America and the way that it looks at marriage. Mm-hmm. And then, again, is that when you're finding somebody that you're contemplating marriage or you're married to now, then you're looking at what are you guys going the same direction and what philosophy and what religious practice, a whole lot of background educational experiences. In fact, a book that I had written called the Dream Work Life Timeline for what you guys are doing, you can turn it into the Dream Marriage Timeline. Mm. Dream Marriage Timeline. So the one area of looking at mm-hmm. is saying education specialized training. What do you want to bring into the marriage? All the education that you have now, is that it? Is that the extent of it? Hmm. Or you want somebody to get a master's degree, PhD, and what are they bringing into the household? That was funny. There was a lady, Asian, when I was going to UNLV, and the teacher was asking, well, why do you want to get a degree? And the Asian lady said, so I can get married. Mm. I'm thinking about that. See, she getting a degree so she can get married so that their children in the household are going to have access to two people who are higher learning and advanced degrees.
Yeah.
And most people, when they get married, saying that, I love her. I met her at the club. And they're not looking at that. So if you're going to be practical and you're looking long term, then what does the household look like with two highly advanced, educated people, if it lasts, forever or that long.
Question.
That kind of thing.
By you being married 3 times, mm-hmm. your coworker was married 8 times, what value in marriage did you guys see to continue to want to stay getting married? Because most people will quit after the first marriage. Be like, I'll never do this again.
As I indicated, kind of abstractly, I like the institution of marriage. So then the person that I marry, they have to have an appreciation for the institution of marriage and saying that what are the advantages this country offers for people who are married. Mm-hmm. And when you start taking it off, tax advantage and buying and this and all these free things and the government, when you start checking those boxes, you're saying this is worth fighting for, staying into.
Yeah, right.
And you have a good relationship. If it's an abusive marriage on either one, then you don't stay with that. To me, unless you're going to get therapy, counseling, all that kind of stuff, or just run away.
So yours is more business.
Yeah, that's what I was.
Not necessarily. So again, my wife, current wife, she is about business and is about the structure. And when you're looking at somebody who's running an empire that's mm-hmm. making multi-millions per year and running it by herself, then it is about business because that's where her mind is. So if the marriage is not somewhere close to duplicating or mirroring that, mm-hmm. it's not going to work for them. So that's why I was saying the unique prospects or possibilities or things that the other person brings to marriage, that's what's going to make it work or not work.
Because I guess sitting here thinking about it, I feel like not necessarily your situation, but a lot of people with that thought process, like, what good is the business structure if the personal relationship is not there? Because in hindsight, it sounds like we are business partners, which could turn into the feeling of roommates.
Yeah, it could get, saying cold-hearted in a way that way. But there again, it's the uniqueness that both parties will bring to the relationship. When I am accustomed to 8 years in the military and then 20 years law enforcement, almost 30 years of being a structure, everything that I was responsible for and held accountable for, I was professionally trained in that. Mm-hmm. So then when I'm relating to someone else and they are not disciplined that way, it ain't going to work. And I prefer them to have their own ideas, their own life, their own. But I insist that I will make, when I really feel adamant about something, it's got to go my way. It has to go my way. Now, and I would tell my daughter the same thing. So I say that when you're going to let the man, I'm old school, learning from my dad, is that when you're going to give him that household leadership role, you better trust in him and running it right. If you don't, then don't marry. Don't give it to him.
Yeah.
But I know. I give a lot of latitude, a lot of you know, responsibilities, whatever, to the other person. But I say when it's something I feel it, and they kind of know, they know. And I say if you don't do that, you're disrespecting me. And then now I got to decide what I'm going to do. Either I let it go and say it's no longer hold the same value. I'm 67 years old now. I don't want to fight and start all over again.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So that's my approach to it, is saying that as an independent, I'm really big on being feminism and equal opportunity, equality, all that. Yeah. They can have that.
Do you feel there's a bigger risk that you're taking? Because if it don't work, you're losing half of what you put in as opposed to her losing her half?
No, my arrogance won't allow me to do that.
Okay.
No, again, as I was saying with the most recent ex-wife, is that
ex-wife.
I like that.
Nevada is a community property state, and everything that is accumulated after the marriage, then half they're entitled to half.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought is then, when you're looking at it from that perspective, that you can't feel bad that she is getting half when that's her half that she paid for.
Yeah.
Right. And vice versa. So it's kind of like, a business arrangement, but I'm thinking it's practical. And I don't want to say that you're getting more or I'm getting more than what I put in, because
mm-hmm.
my current wife is way richer than I am.
Yeah.
And so, but the part of saying I don't want your money. So prenup, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry about putting the business out there, baby.
No.
No,
I'm going to apologize to her if she listens.
Yeah.
So, but the part of saying, and I was fine with that. I still am. I don't want anything that she accumulated after the marriage.
Yeah.
I say that. It is going to be recorded.
Oh, this is live, baby.
Yeah.
We live. You take none of this back.
Be like Trump finding out.
Because you know all of the laws, the bylaws, and all of that, is it easier for you to hit the D button because you know what comes along with it? I think a lot of relationships, our marriages, are way over before the divorce process begins. But because you know it,
right,
it makes it a bit easier.
As I said, I believe my military bearing and background, and then the same kind of discipline and reinforcement through 20 years of law enforcement. And I was already like that before I entered both of those careers, of which now compiling or adding all those together, I tell people jokingly and kind of seriously that, again, my most recent ex-wife, she worked at Child Protective Services. So she was talking to the judges all the time.
Yeah.
And so she got with the judge and filed the divorce paper, forged my name, gave me a copy of it.
So she destroyed the marriage.
No, it wasn't destroyed. We were already
knowing. Oh, okay.
And it was amicable. Bye. Today we're like brothers and sisters. And I still call her mom. Mom, I see them every so often. We have a grandchild in common and a daughter. But the part of saying that it wasn't a devastating divorce, as in we fought and one being abusive, whatever, you had to... It was mutually, agreed upon that we were parting ways. So every marriage is going to be different, and every divorce is going to be different as well.
Right. Real.
So how many need children?
Just one. One.
You have one?
That you know of.
No. Not, okay. So I'm fine. I'm an open book.
Yeah.
So I just discovered October last year a biological through Ancestry.com.
No shit.
Yeah, we can say shit.
He was a wild boy. You guys are here.
No, this is so the girl, or back in high school when she became pregnant, her mother sent her to Cleveland to have the child.
Wow.
So I joined the Air Force before she came back and had the baby and stuff.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And I'm just now discovering that
Jerry, wild boy.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So,
family legacy.
So I raised, raised my daughter, and I raised her to be independent. I raised her to be independent.
Does she have the same thought process as you in terms of relationship and marriage?
I hope not. I hope not. No, I want mine to be, my own one.
Yeah.
And saying again, I don't believe that she will find people that will match the type of women or mate or whatever that I might want. But I do know that she... I gave her papers for independence at 17, and say everything that happened from here on, you are responsible for that. But up to 17, then, you know, it's on the parents. Right. I hate it when somebody says, you must not have been raised right. No, this happened to me after I left the house.
Right.
Give me blame or credit for that. Right. So she's pretty good at making decisions.
Okay, because, you know, Gree said earlier that you are a legacy guy. So you're dealing with a child, three wives, would they all, when it's all said and done, are they going to have the same opinion? Because now your legacy is left in the hands of different individuals and not one sole entity.
So when I said that my arrogance won't allow me, and this is another aspect of it, when I transitioned, then everything that I was doing, had been involved in, what my aspirations might be, then I say that can go with me. Because I won't be here on Earth to monitor
it
and to make it turn out the way I want it to. So the legacy part is going to be, I'm not into hero worshiping. I don't believe that most of the heroes of the black community in our history was thinking when they were doing that, in 2023, man, they're going to be talking about me doing it. I don't think they were doing it. They were just living their lives and trying to do whatever they had the abilities to do. So I'm not much about that legacy, traditional legacy thing. Is that if you remember me and something I said that made an impact on you, I was surprised about 3 weeks ago, we had a meeting with a lawyer, and he came in and said, I know you from somewhere, man, young guy. Oh, okay. So we had a meeting a couple hour, hour and a half or so. When he got ready to leave, he said, SBI, Summer Business Institute, the county does summer business too, where they give the intern to the high school kids.
Yeah.
And now he's a big-time lawyer. And he was saying that, so I was in charge of the mentoring, liaison training, the mentors and the mentees. Mm-hmm. And he remembered me, like I say, now he's a big-time lawyer. So I didn't know the impact 20-something years later that I'm going to be having a meeting with this guy. When I saw him, he was a little kid, a little skinny kid. Now he's a skinny kid growing up. But that kind of thing, I was saying the legacy part, aspect of it, I think if we get caught up in looking at ourselves so much, a lot of stuff that I'd done, say, with KFABs that Greece was a part of, had I been looking for accolades for it, then I don't think I think I would have lost vision for what I wanted it to
in
turn out.
So,
making sure that the kids are staying out of trouble and all that kind of stuff, and they're getting some good, bringing lawyers in to talk with them. And you know, those kind of things, to me, I want to focus on that. So the legacy that I might leave will be on the person who's keeping that legacy alive and not me telling them that you remember me and you say my name, Jerry R. Period Smith, this, such, no.
So you is that's interesting. So, like, do you feel like, you know, ego-wise,
I don't need validation.
The thought of legacy is a bit of self-worship?
No, to me, I don't need a legacy. I don't need anyone externally giving me, you know, high fives or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't need that. I don't need validation.
It's a,
my arrogance takes me through all of that and say, I don't need someone telling me, man, what you did with those kids. I don't need that. And, you know, I don't, you know, try to fault people and think badly of them if they are that way. Like I say, I don't believe that the people in history, in black history in America, were thinking that in 2023, we're going to be trying to, I bet you they would be like nervous. What am I doing now? 2023, they're going to be like putting my picture up and all this. Is my makeup on good?
Yeah.
If we, if
like
they
I said,
2233,
like what are we thinking about that far off? Are we gone?
Man, so one of the characters that I have on my poster is Carter G. Woodson. 1926, he started Black History Week. Mm-hmm. In 3 years, what is it going to be? 100 years. In 3 years, Black History. Black History in America in 3 years. And to me, we're a slave to slave history because we keep repeating it like Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Struggle in injustice, struggle in injustice, struggle in injustice. But I don't think he was thinking 100 years from now, we're going to still be doing this. And we got to do it in a way that he thought that we should it should play out. We talking about 1926? No. We couldn't do it.
Well, Black history is big business. So, you know, I put it up there with, unfortunately, you know, I can consider myself, you know, very pro black, you know. I'm big on black history, but I do understand that it is part of the American traditions now. So, like the Valentine's Day, the Christmas, the Easter,
newly Juneteenth.
It's big business now, and so at some point, you know, America, the business she is, looks at our trauma and have learned how to profitize off of it, even if it comes from us.
True.
So as you're saying that, and I go in that direction a lot, in the sense of the things that African-Americans, especially if you're multi-generational, formerly enslaved background, then you're looking at. So to me, the original black community was the slave quarters.
Yes.
The original black community slave quarters. So socially engineered by dominant culture design. I believe if black people had the freedom that we would not be, I want you to stay black and stay black. And did I say stay black and not sell out? I'm saying that we didn't design what has been defined for us as African-Americans and the black community and the way that we are in our legacy and our history and all that. We didn't design that.
Yeah.
So why do you want to hold on to it? That's why I say I don't claim black, because what is black in America? And when you start looking at the profile and try to look at it, then no, I said no.
Okay, I'm getting a better idea of where you're coming from. Okay.
But when you're looking at then American patriotism and you look at the Constitution, the preamble to the Constitution, we, the black people, in order to form a more perfect union for black people, and you keep going all down.
Okay, let me ask you. Okay, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question.
This is fun, man.
Let me ask you a question. So, okay.
Hit me.
So, because of our, you don't necessarily claim black because of American history,
right? Right. Right.
So primarily, you go on ancestry.com.
When I go in there, because
so in hindsight, they are giving you.
Yeah, I know.
Information. I'll tell you why I went on there.
Cause the baby mama. You asked me. I'm an open book. She asked me, would I be willing to go on there to settle it that I was the father.
Okay.
So Murray called me and said, "You are."
Then
another girl on there. She said, "You're my uncle. So one of your brothers, my daddy."
Yeah.
But anyway, so you asked that. Now, but when you start looking at, say, the legacy. And the ancestry, that whole thing is based on blue blood. Somebody want to find out they're related to the king down the line. And we, African Americans, we know where that's going to end or where it's going to, where you're going to hit a rolling block, a roadblock or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So the part of saying that, I don't, we had a family reunion out here in 2004. And the historian traced our, on my dad's side, back to Lady Godiva and King Henry VIII or something like that. But nothing about my dad's side to say that, where all that come from. But through the ancestors, you can see from Nigeria and Cameroon, all that kind of stuff on there, saying about the black heritage. But when you're doing it for us trying to keep up with the Eurocentric pride, blue blood, aristocratic, we shouldn't even, to me, today, what you got going on today, you don't need external validation anywhere in history or present when you feel good about yourself and what you're doing now. And when you're looking at saying that you want to teach your kids and your kids and all that some good things, good values going forward, and looking at the American values, the American dream. So when I used to be called Uncle Tom sellout when I was an officer inside the jail, walk by there, Uncle Tom, nigga brother.
Yeah.
So then in 1865, war ends. Now there's no more slavery. So the black people that came here after that, can we call them Uncle Toms or sellouts? The ones who came after slavery ended, there were a lot of black people that came to America after that.
During the Reconstruction era?
No, yeah. Okay, there were a lot of black people who came from Africa and other countries who were free. Well, all of us were free then, 1865.
Not legally, but they came
here. No, they were legal. No. So,
Cotilda.
Go ahead. Talk
about the Cotilda. That was the last slave ship that came to America. They came to the ports of Mobile Bay. That was an illegal slave ship that got here.
Gotcha.
So that was
the
last known slave ship that entered American soil. But it was illegally entered.
Okay.
So people that came from Africa, they came here legally. But I don't think they came here legally looking for work and better opportunity like Irish or Scottish people or, Mexicans currently, so to speak.
I'll give you a few references if you want. So I've been doing a whole lot of research. Mm-hmm. And my major focus has been on prosperous professional blacks. The book, 1619 Project. And then there's another book called Slave Without Masters. And the book, The Slave Without Masters, it was showing in the South during slavery time in 1870 and 1800s of free blacks who were wealthier and more powerful than the local white people.
That wasn't the majority, though.
I don't care what the number is.
They were outliers, though.
And to me, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So now we want to add another outlier, add another one, add another one.
So we're focusing on the minority, not the majority.
No, I'm focusing on the person, on the people, to say that.
Right.
My focus on prosperous professional black people throughout. So when I look at my legacy of 8 years Air Force, 20 years law enforcement,
right.
and then say what I've done financially and all this other stuff my whole entire life,
right.
when I start looking at that and say, now I want to add to the numbers. Now I know I'm an outlier, but is that a bad thing? When I want to make
it's
sure.
Not, it's actually an inspirational thing.
There we go.
But
we
when
go.
We're focusing on the minority and not looking at the majority, you're kind of being blindsided on what the majority of the people are going through.
I like this. I like this. You're wrong. No, I'm kidding.
Not, yeah.
No, so what I, his mom, my sister, yesterday mm-hmm. we were having a conversation, and this is the way most conversations go.
Mm-hmm.
African-Americans, even when I had my talk show and I was on the executive board for the 100 Black Men, and when we as professional black people come together,
right.
it was more about the narrative of struggle and injustice, struggle and injustice. Mm. And I'm saying that when ain't no white people around and we're still talking about struggle and injustice, then where's the progressive? When does that happen? When's that going to kick
that.
In?
Yeah.
So I'd rather not even acknowledge it and then move on. So we can remember but not relive. And what happened with African Americans, we remember and then we say, oh, we relive it. So relive it. I mean, you can remember it, but don't relive it. The Holocaust, they remember it, but they go back and making big money as Jewish people do. But we as African Americans, we don't tend to do that. We remember and relive and relive and say, did you forget that what they did? If you start looking at, again, the merits of the preamble to the Constitution, and you're saying that America mm-hmm. and the American dream and mm-hmm. what it has to offer, all my Nigerian friends are millionaires and one billionaire. And they came here, so 1965, the Immigration Act started inviting from the African diaspora, the African continent, mm-hmm. to come to America. Mm-hmm. And what were they looking for? You better bring the money. You got to be a millionaire, you got to be going to higher learning, or you're going to start a business, or you're going to all of the, bring the elite blacks. So when people complain that they're bringing, that the Nigerians think they're better than African Americans, they thought that went in the other country they were in. So when you start saying that this is law, if you, we don't want to bring more black people to put on a welfare roll yeah. or to live in the ghettos. They don't even go to live in the ghetto. They don't live in black communities.
You're right.
But so I'm saying that we should be able to learn something from that.
But is that rooted in culture and work ethic?
So, when I went to Nigeria in 2000, I was there for about a month, and I was part of an elite community
mm-hmm.
of people. So when we walked around, the people bow down, get out the way, whatever yeah. it is. And I'm saying that I ain't used to that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're looking at an elite culture, I don't treat myself that way, and I don't like that. But that's the way the world is. And either you personally and or you pass it on to your children to say, get some skills that are marketable and that when you do start working, it's going to be at the higher level of income. We got 24 hours in a day, 86,400 seconds in a day.
Yeah.
1440 minutes.
Okay, when you saying this right, when you saying this, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we ain't talked about right. marriage at all. Fuck it. We're here.
Check
okay.
this out though, but this goes into the marriage. This, all yeah. of what right, we're right, saying right, now right. it's okay. part yeah. of the marriage.
But when you say okay, so when you say, you know, I from my standpoint, I feel like when a even if it's a Eurocentric viewpoint of what it is to be black, a black American, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like once you start to know thy history, as they say,
right.
you go. It's like you go through a grief process, and it's not that we continuously stick with what happened in the past. It's that we still have people in our community that's finding out what happened in the past.
That's a learning curve. That's a latency.
But when you from an elitist standpoint, because you sound a real elitist,
I am
from
I
an
am.
Elitist standpoint. I had asked the brothers, and you know, I had a it's kind of similar conversation a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the BCon graduation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a part of me felt like it was dope because, you know, the kids are getting some recognition for who they are and where they come from and whatever they decide to do with that. But it did make me feel like it was starting to become a participation trophy, because when you get in the circle with everyone, you're unable to compete. So it puts us in a...
Anybody can do it. Commercialized.
I can't compete with everybody. Yeah. So let me do my own thing to get some sort of recognition. That how I can agree with your standpoint there. Mm-hmm. That I think on a competition level, not just in America, but in the world in totality, I feel like Black Americans are probably bottom tier. We probably are competition wise.
So
we run everything, but we won't own it. We don't own anything.
Any specific when you say competition wise, as in job, education, promotion? What specific? Do you have an example in your mind that we are not as whatever?
Education.
Okay, so
education, job wise, for sure. What do you call it?
Economics. Just average income and ownership. Ownership.
So here's the
what is the technical term for workforce?
Workforce.
No, the other one. It's another term, but I can't.
Well, we'll go with that one because we both all understand.
But we can't
creating job opportunities.
Greece and I are reading a couple of books. One is Powernomics
by Dr. Claude Anderson.
Yeah. And then Wealth Choice by Kimbrough.
Yeah.
Des Kimbrough. And when you read both of those books and start analyzing both of them, understand what they're having to offer, I look at it, say, I still mentoring the school and have a few kids that I'm working with, the Master and Mindset set as well, is saying that, don't look for external validation. Don't look for that. You look at what does the United States have to offer economically, educationally, and say in housing, and just whatever it is that America has to offer, and focus on that. This part I look at and say again that the Africans who come here now, mm-hmm. most foreigners, not only Africans, but most foreigners, they come here for the American dream, yes, American opportunities. And we, if I may use
we're born into it,
we're born into this, but we still don't feel entitled. We don't claim it. We don't claim those opportunities. When I joined the Air Force in 1974, it was that all the people in my community, Black people in my community, they didn't join. They didn't take advantage of the military. So a lot of the set aside and a lot of the advantages, a lot of the programs that are set aside, expressly for the Black community, we as a collective community of Black people, mm-hmm. are not taking advantage of that. So then I would say you take full responsibility yourself for that, and you pass it on, and ain't nobody got to look at me and say, Jerry R. Perry Smith, you deserve this trophy.
Is it because we live in it, though?
So living what? Living what?
We're built. So we're living here. So it's hard to see. It's hard to get an outlet, outlook.
Yeah.
From the outside, because we
ain't been
here,
on the outside.
But from somebody from Nigeria or China, they're looking at the U.S.
Outside looking in.
So when they come here, they know the exact moves to make.
So as an excuse or reason for to Jesus. Say, if they, as in the outside people, are getting come to Vegas because what stays in Vegas, blah, blah, and all that. You know, so come to America, the land of opportunity, and saying that if I'm right here and I can't see as far as for the trees, then should I blame someone? Should I? And long as I continue to blame somebody else, then I'm not taking responsibility. I ain't got to do better.
But opportunity looks different to different people.
Oh, no doubt. My approach to it, and again, I apologize for my arrogance to other people who don't like it, but I ain't got to please two people. I got to please me and whoever agrees with me. Those are the two people I got to agree. I got to please. So the part that I look at is when I had my talk show, I had 28 minutes to record. 28 minutes. So when the African American would come on, have a part of it, and they start talking about that, downtrodden and struggling and injustice. Then I'm saying, I only got 28 minutes. I'm saying this to myself. So I'm looking at the professional next door. And one guy had 15,000 people when he was head of Nokia in somewhere in Asia. And I'm saying, I want you to tell my listeners how you manage and what you need to know to be at the helm of 15,000 people in the whole working for Nokia and keeping it profitable enough. ain't got time for you telling it. Just say struggle and injustice. Now you know. Okay, now I'm going on to tell you when you go into this, you got to research, you got to know, you got to get educated, you got to get all this stuff that you need to do. I'm gonna give you the black print right now. That's what I'd rather spend my time talking about than the struggle and injustice. When I look at black history and saying the struggle and injustice, in 1926, as said, Carl G. Wilson did the first Black History Week, and it was designed to highlight the contributions of African Americans to America and the world at large. Fast forward, the first modern day Black History Month was based on a 1970. The Black student unions at Kent State, they did the first one from January 28th to February 28th. And what they did is based it on, so what we are stuck in like Groundhog Day is they just came off of the struggle and injustice. So that was what they were saying. Saying, no, we're going to talk about all of this stuff that they did wrong, that they did this. So Black History Month has not really changed since 1970. And I'm looking to say 21st century Black History Month. 21st century Black History Month. The people, all those baby boomers, we're dying out. So what is that going to really look like? We're 23 years into the 21st century. 23 years. In a minute, it's going to be 2030, then 2050. And it's like the youngest guy that's in Congress now is 26 years old. They're going to be running this country, black, white, and Asians, and mixtures of all that. So is Black History Month going to be celebrated the same way? The people who know, because I was living during the Civil Rights Movement in 1955.
Yeah.
And then the Black Panther and the, mm-hmm. all this struggling injustice and Black Power and all that. I was living during that time. But the people now, the young kids, they've got to like read about it, or they don't even want to talk to me about it. I don't want to talk about it either.
But doesn't that go into what you were saying earlier about we're part of the American fabric, because we're now at a point to where they don't even acknowledge Black History Month, where they feel like they're part of the American culture, so where it doesn't have to be separated for Black History Month because we are American history?
Mm. So when we're looking at saying participating in American prosperity, that's another concept I have for a documentary, mm. participating in American prosperity. American prosperity, participating in prosperity, not participating in American poverty, struggle, and injustice, mm-hmm. all that. So when you start, to me, if you're going to design a lifestyle around participating in American prosperity, you ain't got time for that. You don't care about that. I mean, remember, but don't relive. So you can acknowledge the struggle and injustice, whatever stuff, but if you're trying to make it and you're on the grind, you ain't got time to be, do some research with a chat GPT or something of what it's going to take for me to do a business plan and going forward with that. I know we put too much emphasis, too much time on the holding on to socially engineered by dominant culture design, white design, socially engineered black community, our everything that we hold on to mm-hmm. as true as our culture mm-hmm. in America. When I went to Nigeria, all the stuff that we think is African, that stuff, the guy who did the Kwanzaa mm. when I was on the board for the 100 Black Men, he came through. And we talked and got to chat and say, mm-hmm. most of the stuff I made up.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's pretty.
And so now we're buying into that, you know, that lie, that narrative, that whatever, and say, because we want to be like other people and have something we can be proud of. I say, not a pride. That pride is Eurocentric, the whole pride thing. When you look in and liking yourself and liking where you're going, and you're designing a lifestyle for you and your family around that, and saying, you don't need a trophy, participation or not. You don't need that. Do what you want. You don't need external validation. Go out and do what you want to do and start looking at the best thing to do. So what is the outcome of me spending my 86,400 seconds in a day, 1,440 minutes in a day? We're time millionaires and billionaires. We are time millionaires and billionaires. Every 11 and a half days is a million seconds. How are you spending it? Every 31.4 years is a billion seconds. How are you spending it? Time is money. How are you spending it?
Right.
Shit. I'm sorry.
That's great. I think at one point in our timeline, we wanted to be separate but equal, but that equal part wasn't the same as the other equals.
So
if the equal part wasn't an issue, but we were still separate, would you have a problem with that?
So separate but equal, and saying socially engineered by dominant culture design of what is equality, what is equal to me, the American dream, mm-hmm. and when you start looking at what, in order to form a more perfect union, I mean, that's an ideal I can get behind. Citizenship. Black people, I rarely, if ever, have a conversation about citizenship. What is the definition of a citizen? What are your civic duties and responsibilities? Your civic duties and responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Ask not what this country can do for you. What are your personal civic duties and responsibilities? When you do that and you're claiming your citizenship and you're claiming your black vote and you're saying that I am a citizen, what are my responsibilities as a citizen? Then now I'm part of mainstream. To me, I say assimilate, but don't abdicate. Assimilate into mainstream society and what it has to offer, but don't abdicate, as in walk away and give away, give up your connection to the black community or black neighborhood. To me, O.J. Simpson was a good example of assimilating and abdicating. I ain't black, I'm O.J. But then when you look at Barack Obama, he assimilated and never gave up his blackness of black community commitment to the black people. So looking at, and I think the outcome, I know, because I'm living proof.
I think his wife counted for that, though.
Yeah. You can.
The black card in his back pocket.
And I look at the, no. Chicago. So with, yeah. with.
Old block.
I got.
63rd.
I got a whole, I did 40 years on him when King's assassination, 1968, to him becoming president in 2008. And I did a 10-year block. So mm-hmm. so I know what he was about in being a community organizer. When he went into Chicago, him deciding, volunteering as an attorney to be a community organizer.
I'm not dismissing that. I'm dismissing a biracial black man raised in Hawaii by his white mama. He doesn't live the same life that the average black man in America, in the States, would live.
Okay, so I but think he claimed black. Is
slightly different. No, yeah, no doubt he claimed okay, black. But he's not raised like the average.
I was
the majority of black men in this right. country. That's what I'm saying.
I like that approach to it. And said I was, and I don't claim black because I don't want it socially engineered by dominant culture design telling me black America, black man is expected to die at 75 or whatever it is. Black man's expected to. Yeah. If you're early than black. And I'm saying, wait a minute, this is a profile of a black man. I should claim that and I want that. No.
So let me ask you this then. You were stationed overseas, right?
Germany,
right? Yeah. What about the black cultures in France and in Europe and Germany? Those, they're not black Americans. They're black Africans, so to speak, or African Germans, or however the dynamics is out there, do they claim their blackness?
So again, to me, to claim black American and saying now I want to prescribe to and I want to live my life based on the, if you started out in 1956 when I was born and come all the way up to now and say you got to make black part of that, you wouldn't get to me. You wouldn't get to who I am and what my experience has been, especially as an adult, if you're going to base it on the profile of black men. I wouldn't, no, you won't get to me. So how can I claim something that I don't check the box off that I'm poor and I'm this, uneducated, and what? If I don't, then how can I claim it? To me, really, how can I claim it?
Yeah. These are the conversations we have all the time.
I am
what's crazy about it, though, because... like I said, this is where you learn from.
Yeah,
you
know, because, I am intrigued. I'm not going to.
He's not the first person in the baby boomer era that I've heard that. I have two uncles that kind of talk the same way.
Yeah. I love to talk to
him. That's why I know how the questions to ask him, because I got two uncles that talk the same way.
That's right. Everything that we do, that's why I said a lot of times like I said, you got to see these type of dynamics. You got to learn from it because, like he just said, his wife is richer than he is.
Yeah.
And that's the question I was going to ask. Like, how does that work with head of the household? Like you said, you like your arrogance, but she the breadwinner at the crib. So how does that work for your dynamic? Because I know, hey, I'm bringing this. This is what I'm bringing to the marriage. This is what she's bringing, auntie bringing to the marriage. So how does that dynamic work at the house, like you said? Because I heard earlier you said, like, they know. Like, when I say, this is it, that's it. How does that work with your wife, with that dynamic as far as, like, because I know finances is big. Definitely, because I know we talk about finances a lot, just as couples up here. So how does that work with you?
My approach to it is that Metro is really good to me. And I do the calculations that they set aside like $1 million investment and give me an annuity. So my annuity is like 6.5%, a little, 65,000 a year. I'm independent. I don't need her money. And I let her know that her concerns about me trying to be a gold digger or something like that. Now, right now I'm studying minimalism, but I want to like put a little spin on it, make it black. Of not being completely doing the minimal, but my money goes further because I want less. I don't need all the extra. And the consumerism of in America. So the part of that, I say that I don't run, the house is mine, and wherever I am, I'm still going to keep my integrity, whether it's my house or somebody else's house or whatever. So I don't look at it for that old traditional way of that I'm the head of the household. Mm-hmm. No, it's that we are two individuals, and we are sharing this living space, but I don't run you. You don't own me, and I don't own you. So don't try to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
I love it that she doesn't question me. Where you been? I want to talk to my lawyer. You ain't going to ask me where I've been, what I've been doing, and give you a blowout. No, I want my independence. I want to be anonymous.
Is that so? Your independence is it real big in your marriage?
So I,
because I know last week we spoke about like individualism.
Yeah.
That was one of the topics we were gonna talk about today, is also having an individual life outside of your marriage, like friends, and how do you balance that? Because I know, like I said, I got the back on, it's Unc. So because him and my other uncle, like my Uncle Terry, they still active with the music. So they're in Laughlin, they're traveling a lot, and that's why I was like, and this is years. This is not just. This is like their end. This is 20, 30, 40 years in. Like, yeah. This is our beginning. Like, this is how Neo started. So the uncles had started. So they dad was in the group. So that's how they started. So when you had that understanding, like, how do you balance that? So auntie is just cool. Long as is it a schedule? Long as she know? Like, how do y'all balance it? Do y'all go out often? Because I don't ever hear about you going out that much with auntie.
So my approach to it is saying that when you meet me, and you know how I am, how I roll, what my schedule is and all that. And if you're going to be, if you know that in the beginning, then I ain't going to change it unless I decide to make that modification that changes to it. So she was accepting, right off the bat. And to me, I had other options of women who might not have accepted it. And I summarily, dismissed and said they're not good wife material for me. Because the uniqueness thing that I bring to is that I don't feel slighted at all of saying that you don't think I am fill in the blank, masculine enough or whatever, all that stuff. I don't need that. My arrogance won't allow me to think that way. So I don't have to need, I don't need validation to tell me I'm the head of the household. In fact, she kind of went biblical in saying that you're the headship. I'm saying like, you ain't got to do nothing for special for me. You're not going to disrespect me. I say it to myself, and I say it low and I'll say it out loud every now and then. But for the most part, I don't need to say that I am the head of the household. And I got to beat my chest and give you the blow by blow of what. If that's the way you guys roll, then yeah, you do it like that. But mine is saying that I've always been independent and doing my own thing and go when I come. That's just been me. So
right.
So, that's the way it works for me. It works out for me.
So, because I'm just trying to dig in and trying to see, because I know a lot of people that are listening in, they might look at it as that your marriage is more approached on business. So how does it like, and I don't want to be all in your personal.
No, mind, no, go ahead. I'm open the book, man. Both of us.
Like, as far as being intimate and organic, is the love organic, or is it always a business deal?
I going think that's on always business.
No, so to me, 22 years now that we've been married, and the individual. I my theory. Growing up Bible Belt in Arkansas, I never saw my mom and dad kiss, but there were like six kids at the house, so I know they were intimate thing. But that has not been a part of me and my makeup.
That's crazy.
So a person, if that is what you and the uniqueness that you and the other person brings to the relationship, then yeah. But if you're going to say that I'm committed to this person for life, that's my approach to it. And all of my last wives divorced me, so I kept my commitment. I could still be into their marriage to them. And the same thing with this one is that I'm committed. And the way that I move about the household as well as outside, I believe I'm respecting everybody. That's just my approach to it. Yeah. So I believe I'm giving her the respect. And say I'm demanding respect without saying anything. Just how I, when you'll know when I disagree with something, you just kind of know me.
But it's kind of like you kind of got the head of the household kind of thing. Because if they don't agree with you, it's kind of like they hit the door. Because you said you went out and selected, not like that. And I don't
and
say
that was part of it.
I don't want to say it like that. I just
see you with the stealth life head of household.
You see what I'm saying? Like, because it's like.
Well, that's what they were looking for too.
With me and my wife, it was more high school, just organic. Yeah. My mom, dad, organic.
you know, Esso's story with how he met his wife, you know, it's just organic. And like when I hear you talk, it's just more or less like it's all business. And it's like, hey, if it's
it was
when
written.
I wanted, yeah, it was written. When I walked into this, this is what I was looking for. So did you learn that from your first one? Going into your second, oh well, your third. hey, we be learning a lot of stuff here, man. I thought Unc was only married twice. So excuse me, man. So yeah,
no, it's all good. When I left to Nigeria in 2000, that was in December, and I'd gotten us I say my most recent ex-wife divorced me in 99. So I kind of put it out there in the universe, the type of woman that I wanted, independent, you know, had her own money, her own thoughts, her own. They just don't need me. So now when we get together and both of us are liking each other and liking what the characteristics that we bring into the household or into the relationship, and then that works. So the whole year that we dated, we were not intimate. The entire year that we dated, because we were, that was not one of the things that was the prerequisite for us, whatever. It worked. So like I say 22 years later,
God bless you.
Well, y'all gotta have, yeah, you know, it's like but right. The part of saying that, of I know I learned a lot of, picked up a lot of habits from my dad, and a lot of habits on purpose I avoided that I you know, saw exhibited in him, because he was 17 years old and mom, and like being a dad that's bringing the new daughter in too, but then also being married and having children by. But the part of saying old school, him growing up in the 40s and 50s and stuff, or 30s and 40s, then that relationship of saying that the wife is an extension of your household, and you run dad, you know, gotta ask your dad. And that's fine for the people who like that. And I said, I don't want a woman to have to say, gotta ask your dad for everything, for anything and everything. Gotta come by me. I don't want that. You run the house, run the house.
I seen that face over there.
No, he's right. I agree.
The wife is over the kids. The father's over the wife. God is over the household. Everybody look up. Everybody report up.
Right. Yeah. I think. But okay. Like I said, for me, with Unc too, man, understanding like the dynamics of the household. Like I said, I consider myself the head of the household in my house. I make the decisions where everything, because I just feel like that's what's needed in my household. Cause that's why I say everything could be like on a case by case, you know, like scenario with everything. Cause you know, my wife does still, she still has her individual life outside of what we have going on. I'm not the end all. Like you said, I'm more modified of what you got going on. I'm not like what I say is it, but if I feel strong about it, you know, and I feel like this is the best thing, then I will stick with it. But yeah, you know, it's equality, mm-hmm. you know, definitely in my marriage, like I said, it's equality, but you know, same thing. If I feel strong about it, though, I'm gonna stand on it.
I think there's less confrontation to me when I'm expecting. You know, I'm expecting. I knew I was getting a good Christian woman. You know, before we got married, I knew that, church going and all that stuff, praying and having a relationship with God. So I'm knowing that going into it. So it's not gonna be it's kind of a confrontation of her like challenging me, of which. In a lot of things in which I encourage, I do my granddaughter and my daughter saying, have your own opinion unless, you know, you can disagree with me, but we're going to keep it, you know, sterile, you know, keep it clinical, and you're going to respect me. I don't cuss, as you probably see, I don't cuss, so we're not going to do that in that. So I want to follow your logic. And if it's good logic, then I might change my mind, you know. Right. Or if I'm okay, you know, kind of wishy-washy on the fence or whatever. And to me, there's a whole lot of stuff that you can compromise on, or saying that I can change my position on. And over the years, as I get older, like I'll be 70 in a minute, that my position has changed. So if they want to try to, I always want to do that. Now I say he's too old to fight it. Care no more. Right. You wore me down. I don't care no more.
Almost 70, man. That's that game, man.
Hey, I'm fucking intrigued, and I wish we had a longer time, because goddamn, I got so much in my head bubbling, man.
Hey, we got to get them back, man.
Hey, for the people who are very intrigued by your thought process, where can they find you at?
I get my personal phone number, 702-277-0864. I'm a real estate agent also, so people call me all the time. And
Jerry, a wild boy.
You're a wild boy.
Wild boy.
Yeah, I have your thought process too, man. You know, as far as the household goes, man, you know, integrity is big to me. I don't really care about the self-rewarding and the self-loathing and the, the whatever you want to call it, man. You know, I have my kids. You know, I have my wife, man. I just want a well-oiled machine, man. That's it. We keep going. All the titles. All the titles. I do not care about any of that. But, yeah, man, this was good, man.
Good show.
This is good.
OG.
Hey, man. Anyway, where can they find y'all at, man?
Hey, man, call Grease. Your local real estate agent, like my Uncle Jerry said, man.
I am S to the O on Instagram and Twitter.
Hey, man, just call me Spence on Twitter. The Husbands Podcast, man. This is another episode. We'll be back next week.
Yes, sir.
Peace.